You're listening to The Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema, bringing class to trash since 1977.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema. We are back. Episode 666 in the books. We're now into 667. And keeping on with the trucking, baby. That's what we do. That sounded so uncool the way I said that. How you doing, Will?
I'm good. And if that's uncool, then I guess I'm uncool too. But.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, just instead of keep on trucking, I'm like keeping on trucking. It's just
gotta keep on keeping on.
Yeah, keep on keeping on. That's us. And here we are. We're keep on keeping on. And this week, it was my choice. I picked one that our good friend Walt had kind of been repping for. And we had just kind of been lingering in the back for a while. And I wanted something kind of different because we were going into February and we had some game plans for February, which we'll talk about at the end of the show. And so I wanted something that was the complete opposite in a lot of ways of what we would be covering over the next 4 weeks. And so, you know, go back to one of our favorite kind of Z grade, quote unquote, or, you know, has the reputation as Z grade. Some would argue that he's not, that's not quite the case. But get back into the world of Godfrey Ho and talk about his film Lethal Panther from 1990. So that is what we will be doing this week. It's good to have Godfrey back. We haven't done a Godfrey Ho in a while.
It's been a minute, and by a minute, probably 7 to 10 years.
Yeah, it's been a while. I can't remember the last one we did. It, of course, you know, have to go through his filmography to figure that out. And I mean, obviously, the first one that jumps to mind is probably the one that arguably might be one of his best, which is Undefeatable. But that was a long time ago. And I'm not sure. I feel like we've done something in between there. I know we have. I feel like we have.
We probably have.
Yeah, we'll talk about it more. We'll go through it when we get to the review. But that's what we'll be doing this week. And keep, you know, as always, send in your suggestions because we keep them in our back pocket. We have somewhat of a game plan for the show, but for the most part, we're kind of winging it. And we kind of like it that way. It's much easier to wing it with one film, I'll say that. But I still keep track of what you guys send me, just in case. So there's still some others that I haven't forgotten about. So we'll get to those. Let's see, I got a little bit of feedback. Speaking of Walt, we got a little bit of feedback. He sent some messages about Hot Dog and Hamburger the movie and said Hamburger the movie's in limbo, but he just realized that Mike Marvin was the producer of Hot Dog and the director of Hamburger. So there you go. The man liked food. That's what he says. And he also directed The Wraith, which we did review a long time ago.
Yeah.
And the absolutely nuts Wishman with Jeffrey Lewis. Now, I don't think I've seen Wishman, But if Walt says it's absolutely nuts, folks might want to check it out. So that's all I'll say. I don't know that I've seen it. I haven't done any research to look. I'm going to be looking now.
Nuts and Jeffrey Lewis.
Yeah. I mean, Jeffrey Lewis and the word nuts kind of go hand in hand in a way. Yeah. But I've never seen Wishman, I don't think. So might have to check into that.
This does look wild. Brian James as well.
Oh, is it an action movie or is it a...
No, it's a fantasy kind of sci-fi film. Oh, no magic. There's a magic lamp in Beverly Hills.
Ah, yes. That's where all the magic lamps go.
Yeah.
Typically. Yeah, it's not ringing any bells. Not ringing any bells. I have to...
Not seen it either. I thought maybe I had, but I definitely have not.
Yeah, I might have to check into that.
Wow, I think he plays the genie in it, which is pretty amazing.
I was kind of hoping Brian James would be the genie in a way.
Oh man, maybe we got to see this.
Maybe we do. Maybe we do. See
the poster.
What's that?
Wait till you see the poster for this one.
I'll look at it here in a minute. I'm gonna play Walt's voicemail. He sent in another one, and then I'll check it out here in just a few. So let me play this voicemail from Walt here. Here we go.
Gentlemen, shout out to Jose for shouting me out. Here's a shout out back. Gentlemen, this year my movie watching project is watching Hong Kong cinema of the 1980s. Very specific. You can, of course. Nope. Give me some recommendations. I'm trying to stay away from the stuff that I've already seen, like, you know, Jackie Chan, John Woo, stuff like that. Dip a little more into the deeper end comedies, Hong Kong comedies, where things get really interesting. As part of that, recently watched a movie called Calamity of Snakes. I may have peaked a little early here in January. Mm. Holy smokes. Not going to be for everybody. That's
snake trauma.
Sure. Speaking of transgressive cinema, what's coming out in 4K? Goodbye, Uncle Tom. The cops that I rushed to order this. Oh, yeah. Also, a little less transgressive, Ninja Terminator, one of my favorites. I'm on the Garfield phone right now. Thanks, guys.
Good old Ninja Terminator and the Garfield phone. The Garfield phone has that has been a thing for, for the whole life of our show, the Garfield phone. And it goes away, and then it comes back.
Well, it can never truly go away, because the fun fact behind the scenes is we've modified both of our microphones. We've retrofitted them into Garfield phones.
Yes.
Microphones we have plugged into our mixers are, in fact, dual Garfield phones.
Yes, indeed.
Of John Arbuckle at my desk.
Yeah. Yes. I've seen Calamity of Snakes. Been a long time. Not for everybody. Transgressive would be a word. Animal cruelty might be another word.
That would certainly be a word for that one.
So there's definitely that going on. And shout out to Jose for shouting him out. And there's shout outs going out all over the place. All right. This is from John over at Now for Something a Little Bit Different, the video show. He says, if you're going to celebrate the 666 episode properly, you couldn't have possibly picked a better choice as The Unholy. Such a fun film. Heard you guys mention February and the theme of love being the topic. Well, if you guys are looking for guests, I would love to join for the fun for an episode. Especially if you guys sit down and talk about The Last American Virgin, or any film for that matter. As usual, thanks for always keeping me entertained and plugging my little YouTube channel. It's always very much appreciated. Yeah, we'll get around to that Last American Virgin this year. Again, that's one that comes up every now and then, because Will's not seen it. And it's just such a weird movie. And honestly, you know, it has such a weird history, you know, because it's a... what's his name? I can't remember his name off the top of my head. Boaz.
Davidson?
I think so.
Yoikin, or?
I can't remember his name off the top of my head. There was a time when this stuff just literally poured out of my brain. And whatever happened has happened. It just doesn't happen like it used to. I'm looking. I'm going to look because I got
his boy's Yakin.
Your boy
look
is,
at me.
Boy's Yakin.
Southern Crosswords, baby.
Yeah. And I think he did the original version. I think there's several of those Israeli films, those Lemon Popsicle films, which I think people in Israel don't really talk about them much because they're, you know, kind of, I guess they're, I don't know what they're sex comedies or what they are. I've never really seen any of those. I just know he came over here, basically kind of remade one of them as the Last American Virgin under the precipice of the sex comedy of the 80s with teens. And it's just an interesting to, it's unlike any of the others in my opinion in that way. So
I was getting my Boazes mixed up.
Yeah.
It was Yakin or Yakin. It was Davidson.
Yeah.
Directed Lemon Popsicle. So, you know,
Boaz.
Can I just step back for a quick sec? Walt was asking about 80s Hong Kong.
Oh yeah. 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 Let's go ahead and address that. This is really your ballpark more than mine.
So I guess, you know, Walt knows his stuff. He's thrown some deep cut stuff that I haven't seen at times when he's mentioned stuff in passing. So I guess if he wants to send us an email with some stuff, you know, nothing else, doesn't be comprehensive stuff he has seen, but a couple that are not necessarily as well known. We covered Long Arm of the Law recently, but Choi Hawks Don't Play with Fire is a really good one. Tiger on Beat. I think we covered Tiger on Beat.
I know we covered Don't Play with Fire.
Oh yeah, we did. Early on. On the Run's one I always like to push because rarely do you get to see Yuen Biao shine in a starring role.
Mm.
It's kind of a pulpy, you know, noir-y film. But if you want comedies, and one that you and I are big fans of, we've talked about covering on the show, is not Mismatched Couples. What is it? With Yuen Yuping and Donnie Yen, where he's breakdancing in his bedroom in the morning.
Oh, that is Mismatched Couples. Yeah, that's, yeah.
Okay, so that's good.
Yeah, that is. That's really good. And I would definitely cover that at some point. That one's really good. That was a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. It's got heart. It's pretty fun, man. So I guess it depends on, you know, what he's seen or hasn't seen, what he's looking for. I'd be happy to give him, you know, a handful or 10. There's a couple of guys in our group that could, you know, give him 30, like your Nathans and your Paul Taggarts, guys like that. That have seen a million, but yeah, happy to give them a list. Walt, shoot us an email with kind of what stuff you're looking for, what you've seen, an overview, and I'll be glad to send you a list back.
Yeah, Walt, I don't know if you're on Facebook or not, but if you're not, our group is a great place to go and just say, hey, I'm looking for 80s Hong Kong films that potentially I haven't seen. These are the parameters I'm looking at, and I promise you somebody will answer. I promise you, somebody will give you a list because there's a lot of fans of that type of cinema out there. And because our parameters are so big on what we cover, we don't really do as much Hong Kong stuff as you would think.
We'd love to, you know, time. Actually, it's funny he says that because I'll tease it, I guess, now. One that's been on my list for a while. I've been wanting to get into some, get back into some Hong Kong, right? Always kind of cognizant of countries and genres that we've kind of gotten away from or so forth. So I've been dying to get back into some Ringo Lam on the show. So I'm going to be programming School on Fire, you know, probably in March sometime. So March or April. So if anyone wants to play along at home, that's going to be on the show.
Nice.
You know, Lam's Fire trilogy is nuts. It's really cool. Fire is maybe the bleakest of the bunch. So, there's so much gold in those hills for sure.
Yeah. And, John, we'll get you on the show. We will. Don't worry. We'll find a way to get you on. I don't know if it'll be during Love Month or if we'll wait till we do Last American Virgin or what, but we'll make it happen. Don't worry.
Yeah.
We'll book it. We'll book it, buddy.
Book it, baby.
We'll book it. Yeah, make sure to check out John's YouTube channel. You can find it. And now for something a little bit different, I believe is pretty much what it's called. I never know the title exactly, but there you go. I think I'll save the rest for the next show. Got a couple more. And then the guys from Caliber 9 from Outer Space, they sent us a really big list of this or that, which I might throw some of those in here. and see what we can do, because he's got some pretty good ones in here. So, okay, let's get into what we've been watching. What have you been up to, Will?
Well, it seems like I always say, oh, I've watched a few things, and true to form, I have watched a couple of things, but I got to say, my viewing has not been as robust as one would like. I guess it never really is, though. But I've been in the throes of NFL playoffs, so that's been consuming some of my time, certainly. Mm-hmm. But I will talk about a few things I've watched. So let's see here. I did talk about No Hard Feelings, right? I think I did.
You talked about it with me. I don't know if we talked about it on the show.
Okay, so maybe I'll just briefly mention it. So watch No Hard Feelings. This one just passed me by. It wasn't something I was really aggressive in pursuing when it came out. I tend not to watch a lot of comedies. Anyone that's listened to the show for a long time, not that I'm a miserable person, but I don't know, man. Comedy, a lot of it just is very eye-rolling for me. And I have kind of esoteric tastes, so a lot of it doesn't work for me. But we threw this on, the wife and I. And I got to say, we had a pretty good time with it. It feels like a Farrelly Brothers comedy. Some stuff doesn't land. But by the end of the film, or even before that, certainly, it won me over. And there's a scene in this. I don't want to spoil it for anyone. But I don't want to spoil it. But there's a beach scene in this that's very reminiscent of a Viggo Mortensen fight scene.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you follow anything about the film, maybe you know about it. I didn't. But man, this was not something. It was not on my bingo card. And my jaw hit the floor. And I was like, I cannot believe I'm seeing this right now. So kudos to Jennifer Lawrence for committing to that. So it's wild. No, it was a good one. There's a few good scenes in it. The leads are good, likable, but it totally feels like a Farrelly Brothers comedy. So take from that what you will. Next up, our kids are really into Jeremy Allen White right now. And we were going to sit down and watch something. They like slashers. So we decided to throw on The Rental from 2020, Dave Franco's directorial debut.
Yeah, I saw this. I saw this back when it came out.
Oh, nice, nice. I gotta say, I liked it. I liked it. I thought it was a good effort.
It's a little long. It's not a long movie, but it's still a little long, and it's not bad. It's got some really good moments and some pretty spooky stuff in there, and scary thoughts may make you think twice about Airbnbs.
Yeah, it's a very timely film, right? And a good cast, you know, Dan Stevens, Alison Brie, Jeremy Allen White, Sheila Vand. And it gives the film almost has a Hitchcock-y kind of, some characters have knowledge that they don't want other characters to know, and that kind of is going to collapse on itself with everything else that's happening in the film. So it was good. It was good for sure. So curious to see what Franco does next.
Yeah.
I said he doesn't invent the wheel, but listen, I've sat through much worse.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No. It's just a, you watched a couple recently that I think are in that ballpark. They don't reinvent the wheel, but they kind of just kind of go back to basics.
Yes. And I have, which is inadvertent. But then after I watched it, I was like, wait a second, I've done two of these in the matter of a week that are
pretty. Yeah, because I know the other one you talked about is like you may talk about it this week, you may talk about it next week.
Next week. I have not watched much, so I gotta save some for next week's episode.
But I do know what that one is, so I'll be curious what your thoughts
that
are
one was
on that.
Good.
Okay.
We'll talk about that because I did have a few quibbles for certainly.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with those two films. I would say that that's the thing, but it's important that people realize, you know, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Sometimes it's just a new perspective on an old, you know. Like a cook, it's a new perspective on an old dish. You know, your mom made a potato casserole one way. Your wife makes it another way. Your daughter or your son make it a totally different way. And it's those derivatives that are important to everything moving forward, right?
Well, yeah, sometimes, yeah, you don't need to reinvent the wheel. If you take something and make it well, mm-hmm. it's going to be enjoyable. Like, really, you know, people that want to see her and go, oh, it doesn't do anything new. Well, yeah, but we watch a lot of slashers, and take any genre, take romantic comedies, take anything. I don't want to pick on them. You know, there's formulas, there's mechanics, and sometimes some directors are really good at repurposing things and stretching them out and flipping them on their ear. But other people, it's fine to just, it's perfectly acceptable to make something that's 90 minutes. It's made well, but it's a little by the numbers. As long as it's done well, then hey, we've sat through worse. We'll sit through worse again.
Yes. Yes.
And not every film is going to be a masterpiece. I think you and I know that at this point. Like, I want every film to be transcendent, but guess what? It's not. So you know, we got to live with that.
Yeah, I mean, you're just not, it's just not going to happen. I mean, that's not the case. And, but the important thing is the film is well made, or it's telling a story at the end of the day. And it can be, again, it can be a derivative. It's fun.
Yep.
All right. Is that everything for this week?
That is all for this week, my friend.
All right. I will talk about a few for this week. I got a few here. I watched a film called Mr. Organ. Now, the title of this always, it just kind of makes me chuckle a little bit, but I kind of been tracking this one for a while. This one is a documentary made by David Ferrier. Now, David Ferrier is a journalist. He's got a really cool little show on Netflix that there hasn't been any more episodes of. He did like one season called Dark Tourist. And it's kind of interesting. He kind of goes out and looks into these kind of underground cultures like street racing and things like that. And it's kind of interesting. Most of it's illegal, but he's out there looking at it and stuff and looking at the culture underneath of it. I don't think there's anything too triggering on there, if I recall. And he's got a kind of an interesting kind of dry wit to him. He's kind of like that guy, that documentarian you like a lot and I like a lot. And I can't remember his name, Louis Theroux.
Oh, yes, yes.
He's kind of like him, except, you know, he's a Kiwi, so he's got a bit of a different type of dry wit. Yes. But it's there. This one is about him. He comes across this guy who's charging people like $700 to park in this parking lot. And he just thinks it's outlandish and crazy. And he's doing this article for his local town. And he just comes across this guy named Michael Organ. And then just kind of does a deep dive on him because he's such an odd character. And I don't know how to describe this documentary. It's one of those, it's one of the weirdest ones I've seen. And I don't know if that necessarily means it's worth watching or not. I think it's good, but this is really a documentary about a guy who meets a guy who thinks would make an interesting documentary subject, only to realize that he's going through a living hell trying to find things interesting about this guy. In that he seems interesting on the surface, but really he's just interesting by default of being an absolute pain in the ass. So it's a strange one in that way. And, kind of interesting because it really kind of turns into this kind of reflective documentary for David Ferrier himself. And that, you know, maybe he shouldn't have picked this subject, but he gets too far in and he feels like he has to. So it's kind of interesting. Nothing really kind of titillizing about it or anything like that, but maybe a little bit toward the back end, but nothing really that's going to like have your jaw on the floor or anything like that. So I don't know, buyer beware on this one. If you're really into documentaries, you might dig it. If you're really into David Ferrier, you might dig it. It's not the greatest, but it's interesting. It's interesting. I would say that the best way to describe the Michael Organ, the subject of the documentary, is death by a thousand paper cuts.
Ah, yes.
He's one of those people you meet in life and you're like, Jesus Christ, I got to get away from this person.
Yeah, we've all met him. It's funny. Ferrier is an interesting filmmaker. I did see a couple of the Dark Tourist episodes with the missus, and we also watched Tickled, which...
Yeah, the Tickled one. Yeah, that's another underground culture, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So he is an interesting... It's funny. He even has sort of a Louis Theroux-esque look to him.
He does. He does. He reminds me of him. I mean, they're different people, and if you know both these guys, you know that, but they definitely will remind you of each other. Somehow, some way. Maybe it's the look. Maybe it's the subject matter. Yeah.
So yeah, interesting, man. Yeah, I got to check this one out. I think I might watch it with the missus. We'll see.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's interesting. I don't know what you'll get out of it or not. It's kind of hard for me to recommend it one way or the other. Just felt like watching some Hollywood pop stuff. You know, I kind of go back and forth. Watch a documentary. Watch stuff for the show, and then say, you know, like everybody, I love movies. And every now and then I just want to pop something on that I know the story from the get-go, but, you know, just want to watch it. My favorite genre for this is obviously old man action films, is what I call them. And that's been a genre that's actually been around forever. If you think about, you know, Charles Bronson films and everything else, and they kind of made a comeback with Liam Neeson and folks like that. And this is a series of films that does that. Equalizer 3, I watched that.
Oh, yes.
Which is Antoine Fuqua, which I'll watch pretty much. Although I don't think I saw the Will Smith film, the Emancipation film. That was after the quote-unquote slap. I didn't watch that, but I probably will because, you know, I've repped for Fuqua quite a bit on the show. I quite like his style and everything else.
Good filmmaker.
Yeah, yeah. Good commercial filmmaker. And honestly, a good filmmaker. I just think he's in the realm of commercial filmmaking. And, you know, bravo. If he's making a living doing it, bravo to him. I wish he'd try something a little bit different, but, you know, who knows? Who knows? This was pretty, you know, out of the Equalizer films, I think I'd go 1-3-2 or maybe 2-3-1. I don't know. It's a weird one. You know, if you take all three of these films, there's a really, really good old guy action film in here.
I agree with you. It's funny you said that because I'm not burned out on Denzel because I don't watch a lot of stuff he does. Not because I don't like him. I love him.
Yeah, yeah. I love him too.
You know, but I got to say, I wasn't too keen on seeing these. And I think I saw the second one in theaters somehow. And I was like, wow, I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, yeah. They're pretty much cut and paste, right? They're not. It's
kind of like Mechanic, I think, the second one, if memory serves.
Yeah. Yeah, the second one also has kind of a father figure type of element to it. Yeah, yeah. So it kind of helps it a little bit.
Yeah.
The first one has got a lot more style. I think I like that. It's got much more Fuqua style, a lot of rain, a lot of Hong Kong action type style. Mm-hmm. The problem with this one, the third one, is they must have decided that Denzel is the ultimate badass. A little too much. There's just a little too much swagger. I love Denzel Washington. I think he's a great actor. I really do. But sometimes Denzel gets a little full of himself on camera, I feel.
Oh, yes.
And there's a little too much of the Denzel walk. There's a little too much of the Denzel coolness. And there's just those moments sometimes. And any actor's prone to this and this can happen. But there's just moments where, like, I'm almost embarrassed for him. Yeah. I'm like, yikes. I think you thought that was looking cool, but you look kind of goofy.
Well, because he's older now, right? So it's almost that like dad cool where it's like,
Yeah, it's like, yeah, man, you look really good. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're still wearing New Balance, bro.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I mean, not that there's anything wrong wearing New Balance. I wear New Balance.
Kids love New Balance.
Yeah. Yeah. New Balance are making a comeback with the young generation.
Yeah. Yeah. They've come back around, man. My son loves New Balance.
Yeah. One of the Louisville rappers, Jack Harlow, he reps for New Balance. So they've become a big deal here in the city again. New Balance everywhere. Everybody's in being everywhere.
The dad shoes are back in full force, man. They're no longer just for cutting grass. Yes. Doing yard work.
Or walking a couple laps. Power walking. Figured I'd go ahead and finish off. I never saw the second Jack Reacher film with Tom Cruise, so I went ahead and watched that because I'm going to watch the second season of the series. I like the series quite a bit. I watched the first season of it, and I was getting ready to watch it, and I was like, well, wait a minute. I need to watch that other Tom Cruise Jack Reacher film. I went and watched it. This one has moments that I like, but this one is like, this one is Tom Cruise at the detriment of Tom Cruise. This is that one. It's not that he's bad in the film. He's not. It's just that there's a better story here, and I think he just kind of gets in the way of his own story. And there's not a good enough heavy in it. And it's just, I don't know. I would, unless you're a big fan of Jack Reacher or Tom Cruise as Jack Reacher, I would kind of avoid this one. I mean, it's fair. It's fine. It was entertaining. I didn't turn it off, but it's, you know, Tom Cruise is better than this. Let's just put it that way. Let's see. How many more should I talk about? One more. I'll talk about one more. I watched Monty Python Live Mostly. I had never seen this. This is from 2014, right before Terry Jones, one of the founding members, got diagnosed with, he had the same kind of dementia that Bruce Willis has now. Aphasia or whatever, where he couldn't communicate and, you know, was forgetting things all the time. That's the, the problem Bruce Willis has now. And so what's interesting about this doc, I'm a Monty Python fan. I know you're not as huge a fan. And, they were bigger in some ways, for those who don't know, in Canada in some ways than they were in the States. They kind of were underground in the States, but they would really kind of push themselves in Canada, being, you know, part of the English monarchy and whatever and all that kind of stuff. And this one's kind of interesting because it kind of goes through their history and everything, and it's them doing stuff live, and you get to see these, you know, these guys have changed over the years. But I didn't know that behind it all, you know, what's interesting about it is clearly you can see Terry Jones is having trouble, and they're all just kind of going along with it. And they all, including Terry Jones, think it's just age. And it's kind of haunting in that way, that you're basically seeing a guy at the beginnings of a pretty heavy dementia diagnosis, and you can kind of see it developing as you're watching this. And it's pretty kind of crazy to see. And obviously kind of sad. And it's not exploitive. Like, nobody knows this is going on. They're just, You know, these guys are in their 60s, 70s. And, you know, when we get older, I mean, hell, we're a good example of it on the show. When we get older, we forget things. And he's, you know, having trouble remembering his lines and stuff. This is not uncommon in the acting and performing world. So they all kind of have fun with it and stuff. But it's kind of creepy when you think about it in retrospect. But it's kind of fun. It kind of, you know, if you're not a big fan of Monty Python, you might want to avoid it. If you're a huge fan, you might want to check it out. And I never saw the live show they did. I just know they did the live shows and stuff kind of as a one-off to kind of, you know, say goodbye in some ways. And I've always liked their dry wit. You know, the tagline for their Monty Python live show was one down, five to go, because one of them passed away young from throat cancer. So, you know, I love that kind of dry wit, satire. The English have always been good at making fun of the bourgeoisie and the haves and have nots. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. And they've always been kind of good at that. And there's a lot of that here, and not a lot of new comedy bits or anything else. It's really just more about the troupe itself. So it's on Netflix. Check it out. I mean, I can't believe it's 10 years old. And I didn't, you know, I've been tracking it, and I thought, well, I need to check that out at some point. And 10 years have went by, Will. So, wow. Dude,
in a blink.
And then here I am. I'm like, oh, I need to watch that. And I see it's from 2014. I'm like, yikes. I feel like I just heard about it yesterday. Wow. That, you know, happens. All right. I'll save some other stuff for next week's episode, and we'll talk some more about that stuff. But, yeah, that's all I got for what I've been watching. You got anything else? You know what time it is? You got any time pieces?
Watching.
Yeah, watching.
Watching. Watch the time piece, breaking it down. It's time for this or that.
Watching. We're flat watching. Damn it.
Can't watching get like Ken Waller, man.
Yeah. Oh. Speaking of Ken Waller, I was watching the Netflix two-part Arnie documentary, and Ken Waller pops up in there.
Yeah, literally.
Well, not like that, but like that infamous quote of mine. But what I always forget about Ken Waller is he has the voice of a small child.
Yeah.
So I hear this voice talking, and I'm like, I know that voice. And then Ken Waller pops up. I'm like, that's him. There he is. And I kind of laughed because I always laugh about that thing we did on the show. But he's like, yeah, Arnold was he was very serious about acting and very serious about bodybuilding. Yeah, it's kind of
serious question. Would Waller have become a bodybuilder if he didn't have that voice?
It's debatable. Bodybuilders a lot of times will do that to compensate. Franco Colombo was an itty bitty guy. And maybe that's the reason why he became one. A lot of those bodybuilder guys are not really huge. A lot of them are pretty short.
He's tiny. He was like, I don't know, 5'4" or something.
Yeah, 5'4", 5'5", something like that. He was a little guy. And I'm not making fun of anybody that's that. I'm only like 5'8", 5'9", so I'm not. I'm the last person needs to say anything about that. But I have met bodybuilders, not popular bodybuilders, but I've met guys locally who clearly are into bodybuilding.
Hey,
and they're not very big.
Muscle Wolf.
Yeah, I've met those guys. And yeah, they're not big guys. They are big guys, but they're, I guess, diminutive in stature. But then again, there's the guys like Schwarzenegger, and who's, I think, 6'1", maybe.
He's big.
And but Ferrigno's huge. I think he's 6'4", 6'5".
Yep. Yeah,
he's huge.
Yates is big. Yeah, there's been a few bodybuilders that have been very, very big.
So the thing is, I think the bigger they are, the more calories they got to eat to put on the mass, and I think that's the reason why they kind of tap out somewhere in the 6'5" to 6'6" range, because these guys are already pounding 10,000-15,000 calories in a meal, and their relationship with food is very complicated after their history of weightlifting is over. It's definitely, I know it's a competition and everything else, but I know it can lead to health issues. It's definitely not a healthy lifestyle. If you ever watch any of those other documentaries of those guys, and I'm talking about professional bodybuilding, I'm not talking about guys that go to the gym.
No.
Their relationship with food is completely scarred forever.
Yeah.
Because, somebody has to remind them to eat every 3 hours. And even when they're not hungry, they have to pound like 10,000 calories. And, when I'm not hungry, I don't want to eat any calories. Can you imagine if somebody sets you down and say, you got to eat these 5 chicken breasts and all this rice and everything else?
You're choking it down, right? You're choking it down. I've been there, like, certainly far from a bodybuilder, but I've done that in the interest of the gains. And I remember choking down like oatmeal with like protein and stuff in it. And it's like, I got to where I literally had to force myself. I said, no. I'm good, man. I got to stop this.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how it goes, man. That's a tough one. It's a heavy lifestyle, man.
Yeah. I got a friend that did it when he was young, and I hang out with him still now, and he has just got really weird eating habits now. Really weird. I mean, it's essentially, it's an eating disorder. It creates eating disorders. It's really
fucked
up. Body
dysmorphia, man.
Yeah. It's really fucked up what it does to you psychologically.
Yeah. It does. It's tough.
It's tough.
Now I'm Googling tall bodybuilders. Good Lord. The rabbit holes we go down.
Nice.
Yeah. Roland Kickinger, 6'4", German bodybuilder from the 90s. You'd know him to see him. I think he did some film stuff, actually.
I know him. Yeah. He's a big guy. Yeah,
for sure, man. He crossed over a little bit. I got some this or that. Do you got some this or that?
I got some from Rob over at Caliber 9 from Outer Space. I'm going to use some. I'm going to use some this week. I'm going to use some next week because Rob's in a bunch.
Okay, so why don't you do a few, I'll do a few, and then we call it we wrap.
All right, Rob's got some big ones here, so be ready. Dracula or Frankenstein? And he's thinking of all cinematic iterations. So essentially, are you a Dracula guy or are you a Frankenstein guy?
Frankenstein, easy.
Okay. You know, it's weird he sends this because I've kind of been, I had that Dracula Blu-ray set that Universal put out on Blu-ray, and I just kind of had it sitting around, and I was like, I'm going to watch, and I'll talk about this and what I've been watching next week. I've watched a couple of older Dracula films recently. But I think what I like Dracula, but I think what I like about Frankenstein, it's interesting. One of these is about immortality. One of these is about creating life, and being godlike and almost having immortality in the sense that you are the creator. They're both, pretty crazy when you think about it and that they've lasted so long. But yeah, I'm thinking this is a little tougher than you think, but I don't think I'm going to go Frankenstein as well. I could go either way here, but I think I'm going to go Frankenstein as well.
I love both, but I think the humanity of the Frankenstein model or Frankenstein's monster, it appeals to me more, right? I think there's this sort of tragedy in that I find resonates with me more emotionally.
Right. Makes sense. All right, yeah. That's one from – you want me to go another one with Rob, or you want to go back and forth? What do you want to do?
Ping pong. We'll go ping pong here. Right. I'm going to hit you with a hard one here.
Oh, boy.
Song Kang Ho or Idris Elba?
that's – kind of hard only because I like Idris Elba a lot, but I think Song Kang Ho picks, he's got a better eye for material.
Yes, he does.
I don't know that I can't really blame Idris Elba because a lot of times with American or English speaking stars, they have agents that are pushing them.
Yeah.
And I think, Idris Elba is kind of a victim of, we got to find something that'll make him a star.
Yeah.
And I think he's really been searching for that. I mean, he's essentially kind of on the same level as kind of like Gerard Butler right now.
That's a pretty good comparison. I think maybe a touch above, but
yeah.
But you could also argue that Butler has had more sort of commercial success in some ways, but it's weird with Elba because I feel like he's the, what's the baseball term? A five-tool prospect. Is that the term?
Yeah. He's got everything. He's got the looks. He's got the charisma.
Oh man. He's got the talent. Like he can do it all. And it just, for some reason, he's not a star and he should be a massive star. He's well loved.
Yeah. He's well loved. Anybody that loves movies and TV shows loves him.
Yeah. And great DJ too, for what it's worth.
Yeah. Interesting guy. I mean, he's got some documentary stuff he does too. I think he likes to race cars and do some other things. He's an interesting guy. It just, for whatever reason, he hasn't had that really big one yet. But, you know, like at the end of the day, I guess all that really matters is that you're working and you're out there.
He's enjoying life, to be sure.
Yep.
To be sure. Maybe he doesn't care.
Maybe he doesn't. But I'm going to go Sung Kang Ho because he's in some things that are unforgettable. And I just, every time I see him, I smile.
I could not agree with you more. Yeah. And I'm also going to go with Sung Kang Ho. I feel like when the dust settles, let's say in another 15, 20 years, when we're sort of the best years of Sung Kang Ho's career are in the rearview mirror. Not to say he can't have a late career renaissance. I think when we look at his body of work, and I sincerely mean this, I think his body of work will be as good as any actor of his generation, regardless of where they're from in the world.
Yeah. I agree.
And his talent.
I agree. I mean, he reminds me of Anthony Wong, although I don't know what really Anthony Wong has done lately.
I don't know.
That, you know, we love him and everything else. I don't think he'll ever go away, though. It seems like Anthony's kind of just backed off of everything. But maybe we just aren't looking at Anthony Wong stuff.
Yeah.
Because he had that, you know, he had those moments, right? Mm-hmm. I'm looking at his filmography right now to see what he's been up to. Maybe he's still working. We're just not seeing the films he's working.
This is true. I don't watch a lot of Hong Kong stuff because of the Chinese nationalism nowadays and the censorship. But
yeah, you know, he's still working TV and some films and stuff. I just haven't seen any of these films. It's just, you know, he works a lot. And some of these films hit and some of them don't. And I haven't seen anything Anthony Wong. I haven't seen anything he's done in a long time, man. Really, I have not. Ooh, he's got a film called Emmanuel coming out. Oh, yeah. So this is a remake of Emmanuel. Follows a woman in a series of erotic fantasies that she entertains.
And Anthony Wong's in it?
Yeah, Naomi Watts. Wow, this is, I guess they're going for a serious Emmanuel film, maybe.
Lord.
Take
my money.
Yeah, this is in a post-production, so it's been shot. Interesting.
Oh, my God.
Interesting. I doubt it's the Emmanuel films, which sounds so bizarre to say this out loud, that we grew up loving.
but it is. Like, it feels like it has to be with that synopsis.
I mean, it is, but maybe it isn't. Yeah, I guess the last thing genre that jumps out, Anthony Wong did some of the Ip Man stuff. Looks like he did a film in 2016 called The Mob Fathers. There's just a lot of stuff they make that, you know, we never see over here. Looks like the last thing that was released is a film called The Sunny Side of the Street, and he's not the main star in that. That looks like it's from Thailand. So I don't know. I don't know what he's up to nowadays. I don't know if he's got legal trouble, if he's hard to work with. But he had a moment in the 80s and 90s, right?
And the 2000s, yeah.
Yeah, he had a moment.
The 2000s, man, he was a working actor, and he was just, you could always count on him to put in a good performance. Sometimes a wild performance, but a good one. I love him. He just seems, I'd like to go for dinner with him. He'd be a lot of fun, man.
Yeah, probably. I imagine he would be. So would Sung Kang Ho, for the record.
Dude, totally. Hey, would you say, and I don't know if this is a through line, Anthony Wong is sort of like the Hong Kong equivalent of like a Willem Dafoe?
Yeah, I'd say that.
Like just a gift.
I don't think that, I totally agree with that term. Obviously, Willem Dafoe has some arch features that obviously make him stand out because he's not a traditionally attractive man, I would say. Anthony Wong is a little bit better looking, but I would say that they both can do anything. They can do anything. They can be the bad guy. They can be good guys. They can be troubled guys. They can do anything.
Anything, man.
Yeah, they can do anything. Sung Kang Ho can too, for the record. Idris ain't there yet. So,
I wonder if Song Kang Ho, I don't know if it's because he's portly, but I don't want to say portly. I don't want to do him dirty like that. Portly's the wrong word. He's not your typical kind of slender actor. I've always kind of tried to find the comparison, like Philip Seymour Hoffman, like someone kind of like
everyman type quality. You know?
Everyman. Yeah, he's got an everyman quality. Like,
yeah, yeah, like great. You know, majority of people probably look like that. Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, let's see. This one's from John, from Rob again. Peter Cushing or Christopher Lee, and maybe add Vincent Price for a three-way death match.
Just leave it a three-way.
The death match. So Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee, or Vincent Price.
So this is an easy one for me. You want to go first, or you want me to go?
You can go ahead.
This is an easy one for me, and I'm sorry to our British listeners. Mm. It's Vinny, baby. I'm Vincent Price all day.
Yeah. Yeah, if we add him in there, yes, it's kind of hard to go against that. The thing about these guys that I find interesting, of course, Cushing and Lee, they had so many fans, and they ended up in big movies later on in their careers. I mean, Lee worked up until he passed away, really, in everything. Martin Scorsese films and Lord of the Rings and all kinds of stuff. And Cushing kind of did as well, as long as he could. And then, of course, Vincent Price did, because all these filmmakers grew up loving these guys. This one's a little bit more difficult than I can think of. I don't know where I really stand. For me, when Cushing and Lee were together, they were quite the powerhouse. Separate, I don't know. Vincent Price really didn't need anybody, but they would sometimes stick him with people, Peter Lorre and some other folks. I'm gonna go Christopher Lee only because I know, and this is a really stupid reason, but this is my logic. I think he enjoyed Black Sabbath and heavy metal, so I'm gonna go Christopher Lee for that reason.
So if we're going to leave it to Lee and Cushing, then this is no disrespect to Cushing. I recognize his contributions, his talent, how beloved he is. But I also would go Lee out of the two.
Yeah. But Cushing's great. He just, Lee's just got more striking features and just more interesting. And I did enjoy those. You know, they would show those Dracula films when I was a kid. They show them on TV. And so those kind of hit a mark for me. And of course, Vincent Price films hit a mark as well. But yeah. So I'm going to go Lee, but I understand Vincent Price is underrated as an actor. I mean, he kind of became a caricature of himself, right?
He did.
Yeah. So that, not in a bad way. I mean, he made a career out of it. So that sometimes happens with actors. You become almost a caricature of yourself. I mean, Matthew McConaughey almost became that.
Oh, dude. Yeah. And he's walked back from the ledge now, but
yeah.
He almost Pacino'd himself.
Yeah, he almost Pacino'd himself. He really did. Yeah. There's a good example. Great actor who's caricatured himself. And maybe inadvertently. Christopher Walken's another good example.
Man, for sure.
Probably.
A lot of those guys, once you reach a certain level, it really does, as an obvious statement, you become about selling your brand versus your acting ability, your diversity and talent, right?
Yeah, even De Niro is.
Yeah.
Went through some of that. So,
yeah.
There you go. All right, what you got?
I'll give you one more here.
All right.
I want you to tell me, you want an easy one or a hard one?
Let's do an easy one, because the next one from Rob is not super easy either.
Okay. This might be easy. At least it's not going to pain you like some of the other ones I have. Spring roll or egg roll?
It's interesting you bring this up. I just had some spring rolls not too long ago.
Nice.
Yeah, I was always an egg roll guy, and I've kind of went around to being a spring roll guy. Probably too many egg rolls. I'm gonna go spring roll. Yeah, I'm gonna go spring roll because that's where I'm at right now. That's where I'm at right now. Too many egg rolls. Now I'm on spring roll.
So I gotta join you on the spring roll train. My mom was always a big spring roll person. She liked egg rolls too. If there was no spring roll, she'd get an egg roll. But I like egg rolls. I still like a good egg roll, man. I still put the plum sauce on.
Yeah.
Forget it. But I'm with you. I feel like at this point in my life, I'm in the spring roll camp.
Yeah. I mean, you could ask me in 5 months and I might be back on egg roll. But right now I'm spring roll all the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. It just, there's something about them right now. That's where I'm at. But it is funny that you bring it up, because I just had some like 2 days ago.
Amazing, man.
What are the odds? Okay, this one's from Rob. Actually, I'll do two in a row from Rob because they're both hard, and that way I can keep track of where we left off. So when we do some more next week, because he sent quite a few. Ridley Scott or Tony Scott? He says we've probably done this one already. I don't feel like we have. We may have. But which Scott, brother?
So this one for me is pretty easy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is no disrespect to Tony.
Sure.
I love Tony. I love Tony's style. But to me, body of work counts, right? Mm-hmm, and to me, for my money, I've always been a guy that has been very vocal about, you know, I could take or leave some of the stuff that that Ridley Scott's done. But I think when you look at his peak stuff, the stuff that he's directed, I mean, it's really hard to get away from. Even if you just said Blade Runner and Alien, I mean.
I mean,
you had some of Gladiators. I mean, you know, I don't love it, but Prometheus, I just watched, loved. I think American Gangster is great.
Yeah, no, there's some really good Ridley Scott stuff. There's some stuff I really like. Yeah.
I got to go Ridley.
I'm going to go Ridley as well. I do like Tony Scott a lot, probably more than you do actually, but, Tony Scott is, he's great, but he's, you know who he reminds me of, weirdly, who gets a lot of disdain nowadays, and I don't understand. We probably don't understand collectively, but I guess we kind of do. Tony Scott's kind of like Guy Ritchie, you know?
Yeah, I'd say that's a pretty fair comparison.
Probably a little bit better than Guy Ritchie, ultimately, but Tony Scott's movies look slick, and they had style, and you know, he had a look and a way of doing things, and I enjoyed that. I think he was very prolific for a while, and people got a little tired of it. And that's probably part of the problem. I've often wondered, I wonder still to this day, you know, the suicide thing and everything else with Tony Scott, it's never come out. He must have been going through some mental health problems or maybe just some health problems in general, because it just seems so weird to me. He seems so full of life. But, I mean, we can go down this road 1,000 times. You know, you hear people say that all the time about people who end up committing suicide. You know, he seems so happy, you know. So I don't know if he had like maybe cancer setting in, or, you know, maybe something else was going on or what, but it's just so bizarre to me still to this day that he committed suicide, because he just didn't seem like that kind of guy. But, you know,
yeah, real shame, you know, yeah. Tough, man. What a tragedy. And again, I love Tony Scott as a filmmaker. I do.
Mm-hmm.
I think, again, he's an auteur, and even stuff he did that was maybe less auteur-y that had maybe, you know, because you think of like, you know, like True Romance or Man on Fire, stuff like that, that he did. Domino's very auteur-y. But even
Domino's definitely auteur-y.
Very, maybe.
To the detriment of the movie, I would say yes.
But you look at like Crimson Tide, right? That's not as auteur-y, right?
Right.
I like both, but I just think Ridley's top-end contributions are hard to overlook.
They're interesting guys in that they both were able to kind of bring their style to big films, right? And Ridley is still doing it. And that's interesting to me. And I think both of them influenced generations of filmmakers. What's weird is, as much as Ridley did, seems like Tony may have influenced more of the kind of big budget filmmakers of the 90s. Certainly the Michael Bays and the Antoine Fuquas and that whole, you know, era of guys. I mean, Fuqua films, they're kind of, for me, they're kind of a mixture of Tony Scott and Ridley Scott in that they look slick, and every now and then they're kinetic, and then sometimes they're slow, because Ridley's films are a lot slower than Tony's. Tony's are much more kinetic, right?
Big time.
So there's definitely, but yeah, I'm Ridley Scott. All right, I'll give one more from Rob here, because he says that this is his dad's two favorite actors, and I don't think we've done this one. If not, it's a big one, and I just want to get it out of the way now instead of saving it for next week. But Charles Bronson or Clint Eastwood?
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. Where do you stand on this one? So I got arguments on both sides for me, and I know where I'm going to go. I'm going to go with my heart, but my head tells me to go another way, but I'm going with my heart.
So I think I know which way you're going. And I will say, full disclosure, this is a crazy top end one for us, because one of the reasons we do this show is our love of these two guys, right? And specifically kind of our love of Bronson. But if a genie came to me, or I guess if Jeffrey Lewis as a genie came to me and said, listen, You have to eradicate one of these men's careers from film.
First of all, you would be like, are you Jeffrey Lewis?
Are you Jeffrey Lewis? Why are you wearing a black tank top as a genie? I'm gonna say Eastwood. I love both.
I just looked at the Wishman poster.
That poster.
Wow.
Look at the cast, though. It's got some nice Paul Gleason, Brian James.
Yeah, Paul Lamette's in there. From
Rance Howard, Dennis Berkeley.
Yeah, we just talked about Rance Howard last week with a this or that. Yeah.
Sure did. Mrs. Achmonic, Liz Sheridan. That's what's up. Her name is Ms. Finger in this.
Yeah. There we go.
Damn. All right.
Hey, Jeffrey Lewis's Hitchcock, the Genie. Oof. Genie. I think I got to see this movie.
I think we do. Doesn't this seem like Cinemassicus territory, maybe?
Well, it does. I mean, the overall rating out of 500 ratings on IMDb is 2.2. So it's definitely...
CTV.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely drawn some attention. Let's put it that way.
Well, what's wild is if you scroll down, there's a Wishman movie with a dreadful poster that's unrelated to this. Looks like it was a TV movie. Yeah.
This Wishman is Paris Hilton's movie debut.
Oh, God.
Yeah. How about that? Anyway. Yeah, that is a true digression.
Yes, that is, man. Black tank top genie. Man. Anyway. I got to go with Clint Eastwood here. I love both. I love, love, love both. But I got to give it to Eastwood. You know, his contributions behind the camera. We're just talking as an actor, though, I guess, right? So, or did he qualify that?
He did not qualify it. So that complicates things, but that's where my argument's going to come.
So, yeah, I'm going to go Eastwood then, because I feel like his stuff behind the camera, great director, great actor. If you're looking at a matchup, I think that kind of puts him over the top. And listen, I think with all due respect, so much, I love Bronson. He stayed in his lane, did his thing. Eastwood for me.
Yeah, so your argument is, you know, quite valid. And again, that's where my head goes. My head goes to Eastman. I mean, great American filmmaker, great American actor, great cinematic worldwide actor. Maybe one of the most important actors to the tough guy genre to ever live. No doubt. Both these guys kind of come from the same era, but Eastwood is definitely probably more of an impact in a lot of ways. Especially with his filmmaking and stuff, because we both talked about what a great filmmaker he was. I know he's still making films, but really his films haven't been as good probably since maybe Gran Torino or right around that ballpark. I think it was the last time I saw a really good, well-made Clint Eastwood directed film. Not that they've been bad, but some of the stuff he's chosen to do too, I'm just not really interested in. Like, I never even saw American Sniper. I never saw that.
No, me neither. I didn't really have any interest in seeing it.
But, I know that was like the biggest film of his career, really, and stuff. And you know, that's fine. I just never had any interest in it. But my heart sticks with Charlie B. And just about every time he comes up, he almost always is going to win. I just still to this day find Charles Bronson's career the most fascinating of most careers. I just don't know. Even he didn't understand how he became a worldwide star. And how he became what he became. And it's still one of the great mysteries of cinema history, really, that, you know, Bronson films, he was, you know, he basically was the American Bruce Lee or the American, I'm trying to think of any other actors from other countries who are genres unto themselves. But you know what I mean, right? I mean, so, Jackie Chan. I mean, yeah, Bronson didn't do what Jackie Chan did. He didn't do what Bruce Lee did and stuff. But there was this time when you were like, I'm going to go check out the latest Bronson movie. You didn't care what it was about. You didn't care about the plot. You didn't care about anything. They'd be like, it's a new Bronson. And that you know, these guys come up every now and then. New Seagal, new Van Damme, a new this, a new that. They come up every now and then, right? Liam Neeson kind of took this torch and kind of ran with it, where I'd hear people talking about movies and like, well, Liam Neeson's got a new movie out. And I'd be like, well, what's it about? And they'd be like, I don't know. It's just Liam Neeson kicking ass. And, you know, that's the genre. It's where the actor becomes the genre himself. And honestly, Clint Eastwood had this for a while too, right? He transformed himself. But really the Dirty Harry movies were Clint Eastwood kicking ass, right?
Oh, yeah.
But he kind of outgrew it. Like, he had bigger aspirations. So I think that's what's interesting about these two guys. My heart's going to go with Bronson, so that's what I'm going to pick. But I have no qualms with picking Charles Eastwood. Charles Eastwood and Clint Bronson. Clint Bronson is definitely a hardcore action star name right there. Surprised somebody hasn't ripped that off and done like B-movies under the name Clint Bronson. But I'm going to go Bronson. But your argument for Clint Eastwood is very, very valid. One of the great American filmmakers, great American stars. And, man, some classics in there. Some classics. I got to stick with Charlie B.
Heart wants what it wants. Not a wrong answer. Like I said, he's Mount Rushmore for us. Both these guys are. So
yeah, both of them are.
There's no wrong answer, man. I love Bronson.
Yeah.
Nothing like a Sunday afternoon watching a Bronson jam.
Yeah, I know. It just, you know, there's a level of comfort with a Bronson film that's, you know, it might, you know, the other people in the room might be like, wow, you know, this is very rapey, or this is very.
For jacking off.
This is very messed up, but you're sitting there smiling with a smirk on your face because you're like, yeah, Charlie's gonna fix all this.
Yep. It's weird because, you know, we talked about like guys that just, or you talked about Denzel kind of going into like Seagal mode where he's just impervious to harm. Even though Bronson seemed like that, I don't know, there was still something I loved about it. Like, I didn't roll my eyes at it. Like, I didn't go, come on.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I don't know what it was either. And it's hard to explain. I mean, I don't, sometimes I've thought about it over the years. I don't know if it's the name Charles Bronson, which is just a great name. I don't know if it's just the type of films he chose. Don't know if it's just the look. I mean, nobody else looked like him. There's definitely that. Nobody else looked like Clint Eastwood though either. So I don't know, man. I don't know. He's been an enigma for me since I was a kid, and that's the best way I can put it. You know, a worldwide star of his type is just not that common. And it's just a reminder. There was a time when people went to the movies and went to see people who look like people, and were unique looking as opposed to kind of all looking the same. And I know that kind of comes and goes with time, but, and I think we're getting back to some of that actually now. I think we're getting back to people liking actors that look different.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean that, you know, there was a time when people, okay, I think, went and, you know, were looking for something that wasn't, you know, a cookie cutter. I mean, you know, not to harp on it and stuff, but I mean, these action movies and stuff now, everybody looks the same. Everybody's got the six pack abs and all that stuff. I mean, where's the real guys? That's got to bound to be coming around again. I mean, the old guy action cinema is that, but it's bound to be coming back around again. The guys that are a little schlubby, the guys that are a little everyman, you know?
As it should, man.
Yeah. Okay, that's it for this or that. We're going to take a short break and come back and discuss Lethal Panther from 1990. Speaking of action, we'll be back right after this.
Beneath the ground soon, violence is my business, fool. The microphone is doomed. Mission massacre all punks as I bust cats. Feeling your back, my ammunition, hollow point raps. You try to run, that makes it even more fun. I just go lamp and vamp you with the shotgun. Cops try to flex, but guns they'll never find. My lethal weapon's my mind. The
lethal weapon. All right. Old school there, baby. Yeah, the lethal weapon. When I think of old school hip hop, he's the first one that comes to mind, because at the time when he hit, he was so controversial with, you know, the gun talk and all that kind of stuff and everything else. And people were like so offended. And I was so attracted to that transgressive nature. And of course, people ran with it. Gangsta rap is basically the heavy metal of rap.
Yeah. And you know what? I remember, like, it for me at a young age, It was him and Kool Moe Dee were the first guys I really, really got into.
Yeah. They had a certain style, right? So,
yeah.
All right. That was Ice-T, for those who don't know. I'm sure most folks may have known, but just in case you didn't. Lethal Panther, also original title, Jing Chang Long Hu Bao. Wow, yeah. There we go. How about that?
About it.
The poster for this is absolutely amazing. It's one of my favorites in a while we've done.
It's very evocative of what we see on screen.
Yeah, it is. In a war for gang supremacy, two beautiful female assassins are given the ultimate target, each other. So there you go. Good old Godfrey Ho, back on the show. This one stars Alex Fong, Eric Han, Kakoi Ho, I think. I don't know how you say it.
Kakoi Ho, yeah.
I'm pretty sure he's the one with the spiky hair at one point.
Oh, he sure is, man. Look at the hair in his IMDb photo.
He's I wanted more of him in the movie, to be honest with you.
He's awesome. I was going to send you a screenshot of him too, but it was late, so I didn't.
Yeah. Chung Lam. Yeah, you did send for those who don't know, Will did send a photo to me. I was awake still, but I didn't reply, but I laughed. I quite laughed because I actually have that in my notes, you know, about that scene, the watermelon crusher.
It's a good scene.
It is. You know, we'll talk about this with Godfrey Ho. He's definitely a director who... and I'm pretty sure he's still around. I'm pretty sure he's still alive. There's been reports that he passed away at some point, but I think he's still around, but I don't think he works anymore. I think he quit working, in the 2000s, sometime in the 2000s.
He's 76. So
yeah, actually his last film was in 2000. That was the last time Manhattan Chase. That was the last thing he directed, quote unquote. And you say to yourself, well, that's, you know, what's the big deal? Well, he did 158 films before he hung it up.
Oh, yeah.
So, and, you know, I think he got better as he went along. He's easy to make fun of. But the truth is, like Ed Wood and so many other filmmakers of his ilk, there's some talent there. And I think this film kind of shows... Is it a little shoddy? Is it a little B grade, Z grade, C grade, whatever you want to call it? Yeah, but I can tell you, he's done worse than this one. So let's get into this and talk about it and talk about Godfrey Ho a little bit. We've talked about him before, but we can talk about him again a little bit. And, you know, if you want to kind of address, you know, he's kind of synonymous with ninjas and some of the stuff of the 80s and stuff, but... Is Godfrey Ho, let me just ask this question, let me put it out there. Is Godfrey Ho a bad filmmaker or a decent filmmaker?
I think he's a decent filmmaker. And my question, it's funny, I thought you were going to say this. I was going to ask you. I think he's a decent filmmaker. Is Godfrey Ho an auteur?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think he has a style. I think I've seen enough Godfrey Ho films now to know that I'm watching a Godfrey Ho movie.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You could watch a film for about 10 minutes and go, is this a Godfrey Ho film?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And, you know, I think he's influenced people too. I think there's filmmakers that, you know, he's definitely influenced.
Yeah.
And created, you know, a kind of a genre unto itself. I mean, the cheap Hong Kong action film. This is 1990, so it's right out of the 80s. And I would argue, would this be considered what they call those films? Bloodshed films? Glorious
heroic bloodshed? Maybe in a way, or Girls with Guns, certainly, right? I mean, that's definitely an obvious statement, but yeah. Girls with Guns are a thing, and he was right in his Girls with Guns phase. And Princess Madam, within the following year with Moon Lee, another heavyweight, another titan of the... of the genre. He worked with Cynthia Rothrock quite a bit. Of course, he's been on our show with Undefeatable. So, I mean, listen, progressive filmmaker, the Hong Kong industry, not to sidebar. I was saying this to my wife last night. She had the enough heart to watch some of this with me before she tapped out. This is 40 plus years ago. I'd say 40 years ago, right? No, 35 years ago. So,
yeah, it's pretty amazing when you think of it in those terms. Yes.
But women are the action stars.
Yeah.
Right? And Hong Kong was way ahead of the curve. Like, I feel like we're still not really there with Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, they've tried. They've tried with a few stars and starlets, right? Charlize Theron, Angelina Jolie.
Yep.
I feel like I'm missing somebody.
Driving stuff, Pam Grier.
Yeah, obviously, what's her name? The Paul W.S. Anderson wife.
Yeah.
Which she's interesting in her own way. She's almost kind of like Bronson in a weird way. She's almost her own genre at this point.
Yeah.
Which I don't really care for her films, but I can't argue that she has a fan base that enjoys watching her do things.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's not for lack of trying, I think, for American audiences or for American filmmakers and B-movie makers and kind of mid-tier action films. We just really haven't had that one that really, you know, they just don't have a Jason Statham. They just don't have a Gerard Butler. You know, take or leave it, but, you know, these guys are those guys now. Right now, Gerard Butler is essentially, he's essentially Charles Bronson right now. Obviously not the same as far as the charisma and the look, but he's basically making Charles Bronson movies. He's just, you know, they're mid-tier Gerard Butler movies. It's Gerard Butler in Kandahar. It's Gerard Butler in Mozambique. It's Gerard Butler in the jungle. It's Gerard Butler on a plane. Those are Bronson movies. So it's interesting to me that we just really haven't had this with a female in America.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, this is, I've never really stopped and looked back why, and I guess maybe the obvious answer is money, but why did he feel the need to do so many cut and paste films? I guess it has to be money, right? Like bang for your buck with these copy and paste. And it's not only copy and paste, it's ninjas. There's a license to print money in 1986, right? So I guess, you know, when you look at him, and I think people that listen to our show can appreciate this because some people would roll their eyes at it. But I was thinking about this when I was watching this film, is because some of the scenes were very reminiscent of an Italian counterpart for me, and that's Bruno Mattei.
Yeah. Yeah. So
he is to Hong Kong what Bruno is to Italian genre cinema.
I think people forget that Hong Kong's an interesting, in the 80s and 90s, it's an interesting area because they have prestige movies, but they also have B movies. It's like from the 70s to the 90s, Hong Kong is really churning out. They were kind of similar to Italy in the 60s through the 80s, right? Mm-hmm. And they had some originality, but mostly they were ripping each other off. And there was this kind of glorious period. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I know that always sounds bad, but, you know, ripoffs are sometimes more fun than originals. We've talked about that on the history of the show over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with ripping off. There's just nothing wrong with it. So, I kind of correlate it to that, and that you have to have Godfrey Hoes. You have to have. I'm trying to think of an American filmmaker who kind of does this. Well, I mean, you gotta have Guy Ritchie's. You gotta have guys like these. You know.
Yeah, these are guys that make genre films well. And again, Godfrey Ho. We love him. I think he's, and I don't mean to damn him with faint praise. I think a film like this shows that he can be a very competent filmmaker in terms of what he's looking to do. He's looking to make an action film that puts its foot on the gas for 90 minutes. It delivers a lot of guns, a lot of explosions, a lot of hand-to-hand fighting. The stunt works nuts.
Yeah, I mean, this film
delivers.
It's pretty relentless. It just kind of goes.
It is very propulsive.
Yeah, it doesn't really, I mean, there are some scenes where they sit around and talk a little bit. And, you know, for the record, I watch this on YouTube. If you watch it on YouTube, you'll get pixelated nudity.
Yeah. It's also in HD.
Yeah, but it is in HD. It looks nice. I mean, if you have to see the nudity, then, you know, I understand. I totally do. But it's still entertaining with that pixelated nudity in there and stuff. And it's sleazy up to a point. Is this category 3 type material for Hong Kong? Is this, you know, I mean, because it's pretty transgressive in a way. It's hyper violent. There's nudity. I don't know what, you know, I mean, obviously category 3, I've seen some of those films. There's usually a little bit of animal stuff in there. There's usually more blood.
So kind of heavy. I feel like this is probably like, I think it's like category 2B or something.
Yeah. This right above it, right?
Yeah, like it's got some stuff, but it's kind of rompy. Do you know what I mean? Like we've all seen stuff that's really mean-spirited and kind of ugly, whereas this is just more rompy violence, I guess.
It is rompy. it's the romper room of action cinema. It's like turning a bunch of 3-year-olds loose.
Sorry, I should say it is category 3. I just looked.
Yeah, so in Hong Kong, it would definitely, for me, it would kind of draw that attention. And the reason why is because whenever you mix nudity into violence in China, I think they deem that category 3. Mm-hmm. Because honestly, there's not a lot of nudity in a lot of modern Chinese films.
No.
There's sex, but no nudity. So, interesting. Interesting. I thought maybe it was. It certainly has the vibe. Definitely not like a Don't Play With Fire or these things we just talked about, or Calamity of Snakes or something like that. But it certainly has a vibe of being on the edge of going a little too far.
Well, there is a scene with a gun. Yes. With a pistol in a butt.
Yes, there's penetration with a gun. There's a butt. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure she's being raped as well.
It does appear to be the case. Yes.
It appears to be the case that two guys are
real quick.
It does. But, it does get nasty. Yeah. Go ahead. Let's talk about this film some more.
Yeah. For sure. No, for sure. So yeah, film opens and it does have kind of that, yes, madam-y kind of vibe early on. Lots of Guaylos in this, lots of Western actors, playing like the CIA. And you know, one thing that Godfrey does in this is he just hurdles us around to the Philippines, to Japan, to Hong Kong. So this kind of gives it a real globetrotting feel, right? Which I think he wants to give us that production value, or the perceived production value, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it works well. And like I said, action through the roof. This has maybe the most obvious statement or inquiry of all time. More of a statement. There's a scene early on when one of our leads is going to assassinate like a mob boss, and he gets thrown out the window in a blanket onto the hood of the car where all the henchmen are below. And one of them proclaims, "Maybe the boss has been killed by the girl."
Yes. Yes.
Not his finest hour intellectually, but you know.
No. But it does lead to one of those moments in cinema that is like, what is going on? Which is somebody falling out of a window, hitting the top of a car, and getting an explosion out of it. I don't know how that happens, but okay. Hey, I'm in for it, right?
Oh, dude, I'm glad you mentioned that, because this film is very GGTMC.
It really is. It really is. So there's a lot of logic stretching going on here.
A lot of logic stretching, a lot of sacks. We get some, you know, peak, like there's a peak moment in this film. We get the sexy sax, and we also get a hot licks later on, we should say.
Yes.
Sexy sax, while one of our leads is wearing a tank top and playing rings with a set of bullhorns.
Yes. Yes.
Kind of peak stuff right there.
While drinking beer.
While drinking a cold one. Pretty amazing. Like, if she had have been like a hairy macho dude, it would have been just, you know, the world would have collapsed on itself. That much GGTMC in one photo. But she's working it. It's awesome.
As somebody who drinks beer sometimes to relax, I never leave the cans or bottles sitting everywhere as I'm drinking beer. Now, maybe I do if I decide to get drunk. Maybe I decide at some point to stop cleaning up after myself.
Yep.
But I don't know what it is in movies sometimes that people are like, you know, you come in and clearly they're an alcoholic because there's 42 bottles on the table.
Yeah.
And I guess it's just a production design thing, but it kind of hurts my OCD a little bit to sit there and watch that. So yeah, so you say this is GGTMC. We got to talk about that a little bit. I mean, obviously I know you'll talk about it as we go along, but you got fingerless gloves, mesh net pink fingerless gloves.
You do. You have white, and so this is a weird combination where it almost looks like white net mesh fingerless gloves, and they're worn by our ladies. And there's like, so you get like red long nails under the fingerless gloves.
Yeah, you get trike. I get a trike in here.
Awesome scene with a trike, like a motorized trike.
Yeah, I think that might, for me, that other than maybe the climax, I think that might be the height of the lampoonishness of the movie is that whole, was it a funeral or is it a wedding? And the trike and all the craziness going on there.
It was a bloodbath.
Yeah. you get a rocket launcher attachment on a gun, which I don't think is possible, but I think it's pretty cool. She just throws a little rocket on there.
But when you wear white trench coats, anything's possible.
Yeah. And you know, you get a bad guy with ball bearings in his hand.
Yes.
And not only that, you get the balls to steal the Halloween theme.
Dude, I don't know what part of him thought that that moment was the moment to drop the Halloween theme in.
I thought the same thing. I was like, why is this the moment to put in?
So you know that scene. You got to know that. So I know you know this scene. You know the scene at the end when Jake's I don't remember who he's talking about. At the end of Chinatown.
Yes.
Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown. So I'm watching this with my wife. I go, do you recognize that music? She goes, yeah.
Yeah.
How can they use that? I go, forget it, Teresa. It's Hong Kong.
Yeah. It's Godfrey Ho. Forget it.
No. Right? It just...
I mean, yeah, I'm watching it and I'm, you know, I'm seeing the ball bearings and I'm like, oh, cool, bad guy with ball bearings. This is going to go somewhere. And then the Halloween music, I mean, literally the Halloween theme comes on. It's a little slowed down, I think, but it's definitely, yeah,
it's
you
in
can
there,
tell.
Man. It's just a weird choice for it there. It's, doesn't Choi Hawk use it in Close Encounters in Thing? We were just talking about it.
Don't Play a Fire?
Yeah, Don't Play Fire.
I don't know if he does or not, but I know that one Hong Kong film we did used a bunch of John Carpenter music, didn't it? That one, that kind of slasher one?
Yeah, yes, it did. It did.
Yeah, so I don't know if John Carpenter had a deal with Hong Kong or if he just doesn't know that he got ripped off. Surely he has to know at this point. So,
yeah, maybe. But that was wild.
But I totally agree with you. At what point do you use it? Well, I can think of about five other points they could have used the music than the scene they used it for. It's very bizarre choice.
Not the scene I would have used the Halloween theme to drop it in like a hammer, but you know, that's how it goes. I love the line. There's a line. I don't know if it's Sybil who I can't remember now. Did we mentioned her being in this? Cause she's really the headliner, of course, for us. But, is it her that says the line, do you expect your dog to shit in your shoes?
Yes. Something like that. Yes.
It's a great line.
There's some great lines in here. Yes. I think it's about, like, you know, if you have an animal in the house and you know, clean up the shit or whatever, shitting in the shoes and, you know, that's a choice or some shit. I don't know what's going on.
Well, this is, and as great as that line is, I think it's probably only the second greatest fecal matter line by a gangster in a Hong Kong film. Because there's that scene in Full Contact, and this has become sort of a running joke with Sean Casper and us, where Simon Yam's character says the line, yes, I'm going to botch it, but to some of the effect of he says, the deal went nice and smooth, like a good shit.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that is a good way to describe a good shit. Nice and smooth, like I'm done. Yeah.
This deal, that's it. Nice and smooth. So have you ever seen the Korean film early 2000s Guns and Talks?
I wonder if I have. I don't think I have.
So it's decent, but Guns and Talks, it's fun. But this film should be called Suits and Shades.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I think Anthony Wong would have been totally fine in this movie.
Oh man, listen, this film, the gray suit and the sunglass budget for this film is off the hook, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
At what point these henchmen go to the playbook and go, you know, we're getting worked here. I think we got to take the shades off. They love
their
shades. But that's, you know, obviously I tease, it's a stylistic choice, right? Good mm-hmm. enough for tequila, good enough for me, right?
But yeah. I mean, I'm down with it. You know, and it's a simplified way to make the heavies the heavies. You know, suits
visually,
and
to give them sort
of a, suits and shades. Know. Yeah. Oh, I mean, yeah. Obviously, it inspired a whole generation of filmmakers. You know, Ringo Lam and all those guys with the suits and shades, and you know Tarantino with the suits and shades. He did that with Reservoir Dogs and.
Riffing on Ringo, yeah, but it's very much like a heroic bloodshed / girls with guns thing. There's a heroic bloodshed aesthetic here with kind of girls with guns, which they're kind of woven into the same quilt, I guess. my note, I don't know what it says now. I had something great. The one dude that goes cross-eyed during the watermelon scene. Oh, a little, no, maybe it is him, I think, maybe. He looks kind of like the love child of Richard Norton and Don Johnson.
Yes. So there's a scene where I guess she's driving a tractor of some sort. And she's interrogating a gentleman, an American gentleman. And she's going to run over his balls with this. And she's crushing watermelons. I got to tell you, just the idea of being ran over, I don't need the watermelons to scare me. But she scares this guy into a heart attack. And it's as Will said on the Facebook group, it's subtle acting. It's a nice subtle touch. Brando, be warned. You've been duped.
It's amazing. But I mean, that's the thing. Listen, in all seriousness, I kind of love it because it gives us this kind of like rompy illustration, like this visual, like, ooh, if it does this to the melon.
Yeah.
It's going to do right. I love it. Like
it works. Yeah. I mean, you know, the way to describe this film and some of these heroic bloodshed films, especially the B tier of these, or you go Girls with Guns films and stuff like that, is they're kind of like cartoons.
They absolutely are.
And just, you know, hyper-violent, kind of crazy cartoons. And they're not, you know, like we talked about earlier in the show, they're not reinventing the wheel, but that's not the point. The point is to just kind of give you a romp, give you some fun. And this movie has several sequences that you're just kind of like laughing and kind of going along with it and stuff. It's not heavy drama. It's not like The Killer, which is more drama, right? John Woo taking it much more seriously. This is more a derivative of that, where it's just like, this is going to be a bunch of fun. Let's have some fun with it. And that's what Godfrey Ho does well.
Oh, big time. Big time.
I got to say, what about that sequence where they're doing target practice and they both decide to shoot at a Coke can between the two of them? Is that wise? Is it wise to do target practice with a Coke can? You know, if me and you are directly across from each other, less than 10 feet, and we shoot at a Coke can?
No, I would say it's not, but you're not the Marx women. Yes. That's true. These ladies are. You talked about the trike, like the three-wheeler assault scene, which is awesome. I want to say this too, as much as we get like so much gunplay, which is fun, like, you know, it does become a little fudge for breakfast, you know, but again, it's under 90 minutes. So
yeah.
You know, he's not interested in like Johnny to like building it up, and then sort of an explosive. He's just giving you wall to wall, wire to wire guns, which again, it does what it says in the tin. But I'll say this: I feel like the hand to hand fighting in this is pretty legit. Like, there's a pretty fun sequence where our two female assassins are fighting in this like apartment building. The stunt work's awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a couple good fight sequences in
really
the film.
Really legit. Like, legit stuff. Like it's brief. I'm not saying, you know, it's going to win anyone any awards. But I'll tell you what, it's as good as you're going to see. It's better than anything that was happening in Hollywood for years. Like, it's solid, solid stuff, right? It doesn't look ridiculous or out of place in a Hong Kong action film.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, I think some of the fight sequences are good. There's one in a kind of an alleyway.
Yeah,
that's real well done during the daylight hours. There's the one with the two females in the apartment. There's several fight scenes that are pretty good. They're not over long and they're not over stylized. They're pretty quick, but they're good. I think it's interesting you bring up the fudge for breakfast thing with gunplay. I think that's always the issue I have with gunplay, heavy gunplay in films, is after, you know, if you're getting barraged with the sound of guns going off. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I enjoy gunplay in films, but that can be too much. I often think about when I went and saw, speaking of Antoine Fuqua, when I went and saw Replacement Killers with Chow Yun-fat.
And Mira Sorvino, was it?
Yeah, yeah. When they tried to, you know, make him an American star. I often think about how cool that movie was, and then about halfway through, I was so sick and tired of gunshots. I just about lost my mind because there's just so much gunshots. And then I remember watching a making of that film, and Chow Yun-fat was even saying that his fingers and hands were hurting because he was pulling the trigger so much
on the gun. And those are some calloused fingers.
Yeah. So like even he was complaining that there was so much gunplay that his hands were completely exhausted. So
that's nuts.
It is nuts. I'm looking. Oh, okay. I see what you said.
This is really good. You have to listen with the sound on, though.
Yeah, okay. I'll check that out. Yeah.
That'll be at some point. You'll appreciate that. But Hand-to-Hand's good. How about this? We call it back to the 80s with a good old fashioned slow-mo grocery store shootout.
Yeah. 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 I like that. The way they set up the aisles, they do some dolly shots in there, some tracking shots. Pretty nice.
It is good. And that's the thing again. Let's give credit where it's due. Godfrey Ho moves us. It's not like it does become very fudge for breakfast, but he's moving us around to different locales, quote unquote, different countries, the grocery store, the funeral, the warehouse, apartment building. So he does give us a lot of variety in sort of locales and geography, which is good. One thing I want to say about this film, and I never thought I would compare the two of them, but Godfrey Ho in this film, like Terrence Malick, really admires the consistent use of clothes lines
mm-hmm.
that Godfrey Ho uses.
Oh, like, you're talking about he's using them like in a kind of like an invisible wall or kind of like a stylistic.
Yeah, Terry Malick's like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about, man.
You know, there's a part of me that just hopes that filmmakers like Terry Malick, you know, Stanley Kubrick, Steven Spielberg, Scorsese, but of all of these, Scorsese seems like he'd be the one. But there's a part of me that hopes that they're just sitting around, like, digging around on YouTube for Hong Kong action films from the 90s.
And I would love that. I guess probably Marty would be the guy to appreciate. Maybe Spielberg.
Yeah, on the surface, Marty would definitely be the guy that would be like, do you know who Godfrey Ho is? And he'd be like, oh, yeah. But you'd probably be surprised. You know, I'm always amazed at, you know, when I read more and more about Stanley Kubrick, I'm always amazed at what he found to be really amazing in cinema.
Yes.
It was pretty much the opposite of everything he did.
No, I read that too, and I was kind of impressed or surprised. A couple of things I want to mention too, because I want to give Godfrey his flowers.
Yeah.
There's a couple of scenes in this that visually are really beautiful. Like there's a scene early on where it's really saturated in green and red, and it legitimately feels like a Wong Kar-wai film.
Yeah.
It looks really good. And then there's the scene with the fireworks where it's shot really low to the ground at the palm tree. And again, it's really green. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, that's a really good looking shot. Like, and we don't normally associate Godfrey Ho films with being well shot. But again,
yes,
a lot rather do, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, he's not just some hack who couldn't shoot his way out of a paper bag. You know, he was making money. He knew there was a market there. And
yeah, he's an interesting filmmaker. It's like he got better as he went along, which you almost would have to get better.
Yeah.
Because you just learn. I'm sure there's junk in between. I know there is. I just looked at his filmography a little while ago. But, I mean, it's easy to make fun of filmmakers. Godfrey Ho, Ray Dennis Steckler, Ed Wood. Yeah. It's easy to make fun of these guys, but these guys are going out there and doing it. And that's, that's more than most people will ever do. So I still find that amazing. And just in the history of this show, we've done two or three Godfrey Ho films, and I've been entertained every time we've done them.
Yeah.
I mean, are they a little junky and messed up? Sure they are. But I've never been bored. And I'm sure we'll do some more. I'm sure we'll do some more.
And let's face it. Their intent is not to stir the human soul.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the human loins, but not the human soul, right? Like their intent is to give you something that's going to be propulsive for 90 minutes.
Yeah.
So let's grade them on the scale of with which their intention is.
Right, right.
So kudos to them. We mentioned this. Speaking of kudos to Ho, man. Lots of hot licks.
Lots of hot licks, yes.
Sexy sex hot licks in one film. Trench coat, sunglasses. Sadly, he didn't get to dab the butterfly knife on his bingo card with this one, but you know, you can't have it all. we do get an awesome, it's kind of like a peak, like boss asshole move where he's playing golf and he sucker punches one of his henchmen in the gut.
Yes.
That's awesome. And you know what's great too? We get the Scarface compound kind of like invasion.
Yeah.
Which is cool. And God bless Godfrey. You know, he allows us as the viewers to identify which ones are from the Japanese faction because they're all wearing kamikaze headbands.
Yes. So. Well, yeah. I mean, if anybody knows, if there's something synonymous with Godfrey Ho, it's the headband.
Mike Abbott knows this.
Yes. So many people in Godfrey Ho films have worn questionable headbands point to where they wear headbands that actually say what they are. Like this, ninja. This is a ninja.
This is a Japanese gangster invading the compound.
This is, this is a bionic ninja. It's interesting that when I think of him, one of the first things I always think of is headbands.
It's incredible. And how about this? We thought about Charles Bronson. We get a harmonica scene in here.
Yeah, we do.
We get harmonica. We get lots of gun. I thought of you. Lots of like gun throw shooting.
Yes.
You know, like they're kind of throwing the gun as they're shooting it. Like
curving bullets around corners and things like that.
Yeah, like they're just kind of like their arms just whipping out as they're shooting. Yeah, you know, it's like Muhammad in, or AKA Washington in Raiders of Atlantis.
Yeah. Look, I mean, this type of movie is the biggest sin these type of movies, and I know we say this a lot, but we review these kinds of films on occasion. The biggest sin you can do with these kind of films is be boring.
Yes.
And this isn't boring. It's just, look, it's not amazing. I'll be the first to tell you that, but it's not boring either. It's well made. It's fun. It's goofy.
Oh man! Did you see that?
No. I did. But I'm also seeing. You know, I'm looking through some stuff and seeing. You know, I always remember that Richard Harrison really hated Godfrey Ho for using him so much. as if it was Godfrey Ho's fault. I'm sure he signed some piece of paper somewhere along the way.
Exactly.
To make himself relevant and to keep relevancy. I mean, I think that guy was always bitter about, you know,
turned down
Fistful of Dollars. Yeah.
That's how it goes, man. That's how it be. Warehouse Shootout's fun at the end. And like you said, there's a real diversity even in the guns used. Like we get things that don't make sense, but we're okay with this because it's a comic book film. Rocket launcher attachments on guns.
Yeah, I mean, literally, it's like a Nerf gun. She just picks up a big, well, not a big, but kind of like a, well, maybe an 8-inch, 12-inch rocket, just sticks it on the end of her gun, and all of a sudden she has a rocket launcher. It makes no sense.
Yeah, that 8-inch rocket. Yeah,
the 8-inch red rocket she just throws on there. And boom, she's got a rocket launcher. And I'm like, well, why wouldn't you have more of those? She only has one. It's strange. But again, you know, we're trying to put reason to a film that's really made to just entertain you.
That's right.
I mean, I guess a good example of this is the bad guy lair. Let me just bring this up because I got to bring this up now because I forget.
Done. So we're on you.
Yeah. So I don't really have much more to add because I've kind of added everything as we went along. But I will say this. This might have, pound for pound, at least as far as our reviewing history goes, the most vases in one room that I've ever seen in a film.
Oh, man. Listen, you're into late 80s, early 90s interior decorating porn? Yeah. If you want dusty roses, grays, whites, vases,
yes.
This is your jam.
My Lord, was there, you know, I was thinking to myself, well, clearly he's setting this up to break all these because it just looks ridiculous. It looks like you're sitting in the middle of a fucking bowling pin setup. I kept rewinding. I was like, how many? I was trying to count them. I was like, how many vases are in this room? I'm going to say at least 20 to 30. And we're not talking little vases, people. We're talking people-sized vases. We're talking vases that people can get in and hide. So I thought for sure they were going to come back, right? Because usually you don't set up something like that without it coming back. And I thought people might be hiding in them and we might get some gunshots. And first time I ever saw this and stuff. And then I remembered that this is just a stylistic choice to have this bad guy lair have all these vases. So I just want to bring that up. Not a big thing, but definitely a GGTMC observation.
Yes.
But no, I think the film's fun. I think it wastes no time. It gets into action really fast. It's got the CIA. It's got drug smuggling. It's got Americans and Asians working together and working against each other. It's very simple. I kind of wish they wouldn't have got rid of one character at some point. I'm not going to say who and what, because I think that character brought some liveliness to it.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure you know who I mean, but I don't want to say anything because it's a bit of a spoiler, because it was a surprise to me, because I thought it would carry through for the whole film and make it kind of a vengeance kind of movie as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that, you know, I haven't seen all of Godfrey Ho's films. That would be a task.
That is a task.
And I don't know that I would have the patience to do that. And watching his stuff back to back to back would probably be to the detriment of his stuff. To be honest, because I don't think that's really, I mean, that's like even watching too many Scorsese films in a row or too many of anybody's films in a row, I think can sometimes be to the detriment of the filmmaker, because you can see all their tricks over and over and over again, right? I think it's good to step away, see some other stuff, come back and appreciate what that person's doing. So I'm one of those people who rarely will do like a director retrospective and watch just like five or six films from, you know, whomever, because I always feel like I can kind of see the creases. I can kind of see the stuff kind of shining through. So I'll kind of always kind of go back and forth. But this is that kind of movie. What this movie reminds me of, you've had your greens, you've had your healthy food and everything else. You need a piece of cake, or you need a donut, you need something like that. And then you can go back to some other stuff, some proteins or something else, just to use a food analogy. Not that you have to do any of that, but I'm just saying you eat. Even if you eat bad, you still try to eat somewhat good. And so you eat, you know, some stuff, some healthy stuff in between. This film is, I mean, this is like, it's like a big, fat, jelly-filled donut. I mean, it's just a bunch of sugar and spice and everything that's nice. It's just a big silliness. You know, it's one of his better films, at least that I've seen. I still don't think it trumps Undefeatable, because that one, we had so much fun talking about, and that one lives on in infamy due to the the knife licking and the insanity of the final fight. And of course, if I remember correctly, Loaf was on that episode with us, and one of my favorite moments in the history of the show is him doing the impersonation of him combing his hair and going, "Angela," which is a great moment. I just enjoy that stuff quite a bit, so I would like to do more Godfrey Ho films, and I think we probably will. I mean, let's be honest. He's one of those directors that we can constantly prune a choice from at any given time. And just titles like Vampire Raiders, Thunder of Gigantic Serpent, Ninja, comma, Force of Assassins. I have no idea whether there's a comma in there, but who knows. Obviously, I have been meaning to do Scorpion Thunderbolt for some time, and I believe the Thunderbolt films are the ones that Harrison's in. He might be in some other ones. I'm pretty sure he is, but I think the Thunderbolt ones, but Scorpion Thunderbolt's been one I've been trying to do forever. And we almost did it, but, I think the only print I could find was in Spanish, and I just didn't feel like, not that there's anything wrong with that. I just didn't feel like watching, a print of that in Spanish for whatever reason. But yeah, Ninja Dragon, Ninja Thunderbolt, these films, you know, if you want to see Richard Harrison and, you know, Guyliner and things like that. Is Harrison still alive, or did he pass away? Do you know? The IMDb says he's still alive, but I don't know if he is. Are you there? Are you turned down? Are you incognito? So yeah, I really enjoyed the film. I did, for the record, and I had a good time with it. You can't go wrong with the simplicity of the action here. What do you want? You want gunfights? You want violence? You want kicks to the face? You want a good time? Then you can't go wrong with Lethal Panther. You just can't. It's not A-plus material. It's not a 10 out of 10, but it's a fun B-movie. That's what I'll say.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Yep.
It definitely is.
All right, I'll kick it over to you for Make or Breaks MVTs.
Awesome. Make or Break, this is going to seem almost counterintuitive, but I'm going to go with the fight scene that happens on the balcony at the apartment complex seems kind of odd or counterintuitive, but, you know, because the film has so much gunplay, but, you know, you can have guns and explosions and do all that. But when you can get, you know, your two female leads fighting on a balcony, it looks legit. There's wild stunt work down this kind of corridor in this apartment building. You get the Malick clotheslines and sheets and everything else. I was really impressed with that scene. And like I said, it just shows the quality that kind of went into it in addition to all the stunts and everything else. MVT, good guy, like Sybil Hugh, but I feel like there's, you know, all the principles are good in it. I got to give it to Ho, man. Let's give Godfrey his flowers here. He puts together a film that is, and again, I don't want to damn it with faint praise, but it's certainly, it functions very well as a wall-to-wall action film, as a girls with guns, as a bit of a heroic bloodshed film, stunt work, action, explosions, whips around. You know, it does exactly what it sets out to do, and it does it competently. My score is a 7.25 out of 10. It's a good one.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, yeah. No, it's a good little fun movie. My MVT is also Ho, although I do like... I think everybody's competent in the film for this type of film. I don't think there's any really bad performances here. I think everybody does what they're asked to do, even if it's random striptease dancing in the backyard, which at some point one female character does. Like, why is she dancing over there? Anyway, she's not stripping for the record, but it's like she's going to. I think I'm going to go with the wedding sequence or the trike sequence is what we'll call it.
Great sequence.
Yeah, that's a great moment. There's a lot of great moments, though. The grocery store sequence is underrated, man. That's a really good sequence.
And probably 4 or 5 really rock-solid sequences here.
So that's the thing, right? I mean, yeah, the movie's not great, but it has these moments that kind of rejuvenate it and bring it back to life. And that's what's kind of fun about it. And I think that's what Godfrey Ho knows how to do. He knows that he might be losing the audience a little bit. We better rejuvenate it and throw an action scene in here. My score is just a little bit lower than yours. It's 7 out of 10. I think this movie is fun and a great example of how you do these movies in a B form. There's also, you know, there's A forms of these, although I think, you know, The Killer would be considered, you know, a heavy drama and maybe an A picture. If you've never seen stuff like this, girls with guns films and everything else, this is rompy and fun. And I dare you to watch it and not be smiling. Let's put it that way. It's not like ridiculous, like it doesn't, like I never felt like it was like you can't really make fun of it. I guess you kind of can with some of the weapons and some of the stuff that goes on, but
sure,
I never really felt like it was like that level of camp. But
well, it's not Undefeatable, which is a joy to behold.
Yeah it's campy, not but
goofy romp, whereas this is like played pretty straight faced.
Yeah. Okay, that is the big show. Definitely check out Lethal Panther. You can find it on YouTube. I think it's got a DVD release out there somewhere with another. I think there's another Lethal Panther film, Lethal Panther 2, but I don't think Godfrey Ho did that one. I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. All right, next week we're going to kick off something. Will, you want to go ahead? This is your idea, so I'm going to let you kind of talk about what we're doing for February.
Yeah, so February, as everyone knows, Valentine's Day is in February. And my mom's birthday is in February, you know. And from
my brother's birthday is in February.
Brother's birthday is in February. There's a lot of love in the air in February. And so I don't know what prompted this. You know, I think about the show, I think about stuff we've done. I don't really like to do themes, but now and then we do a theme. We did Sleazy Summer a while back, which you know, maybe we'll bring back at some point.
No Murder March? Was it No Murder March or May?
May, I think.
Yeah. We do them every now and then just to have some fun.
Because we cast a wide enough net that it's not like we're going to be too beholden to things that are going to box us in, right? Like,
I wouldn't want to stick to, you know, something every year. We tried that a little bit. We did that with the Mother's Day stuff.
Yep.
And somebody, it just becomes, I know it sounds terrible and we do this for fun, but it does become a little bit of work when you do that. So
you want to keep it freewheeling and improvisational, which is one of the reasons we don't pursue more sponsorship opportunities anymore, right?
Yeah. Pretty much it. Yeah.
But it's going to be a month of love. at the DTMC.
Yeah.
So love can be many things. Love can be between a couple, romantic love. Love can be a bromance.
Yes.
Love can be about
an item.
An item.
A weapon.
Weapon.
Yeah.
Love is many things to many people, but love is a beautiful thing. So all month, we're going to be programming films that have love as an undercurrent, sometimes more overt than others, but love is in the air.
Yeah. I mean, we can, if you want to, we already know the whole month. If you want to talk about what we're doing next week, and then I'll talk about what we're doing the week after, and then you can talk about because it's just four films. We might as well get them out there.
So people can play along. So we're going to kick off Love Month with one that has been on our roadmap, at least sort of talked about as a roadmap film, probably from day one.
Yeah, it's been around quite a long time.
God, you know, so long. I've loved this film. I think it's an incredible film. It's a lot of people consider it a B film of his, but to me, I think it's just his most underappreciated, underseen film, and it's John Carpenter's Starman.
Nice.
Probably the most sort of straightforward, sort of conventional love film, as it were, in terms of a relationship between a couple. But that's going to be week one. What are we doing week two?
Week two, we'll be switching it up a little bit and go for the not just love of a female, which is in the film, but also love of a weapon, as you heard me say. And that's we're going to do John Milius's Conan the Barbarian, which is the love of steel.
The love of steel, man. That's it.
Yeah.
Week three is going to take us from, what is it, Samaria?
Yeah. Hyboria? Man, I'm like the world's biggest Conan fan, and I can't even remember the Hyborian age. Out of Samaria, maybe. Aquilina. Let's just roll with it. John Milius world.
Yeah, we're going to go from there all the way back to 1970 Harlem.
Yeah.
Ossie Davis. Cotton Comes to Harlem. You may ask yourself, why this film?
Yeah.
Because the romance, the love for his friend, partner, Godfrey Cambridge, Raymond St. Jacques, the bromance is strong in this one.
Yeah.
So it's about the love of two friends. So yeah.
I think that one's good. Honestly, even though it's well known, I still think that one's underseen.
Dude, it's so underseen. And, you know, you and I love blaxploitation jams. But this is one, yeah, even in that realm, it just doesn't quite get talked about. And listen, Ossie Davis directed it, man.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. We haven't done a blaxploitation for a little while.
Yeah, it's going to be looking good forward to talk about, man. Good cast.
Also, I found out last night that those villages Conan is shot on is the same fort they shot El Condor in.
No.
Yeah, because I didn't know they shot Conan in Almeria, Spain. So they,
not either.
Yeah. So it makes sense why I love it so much. Anyway, we'll get to that. Uh-oh. And then last, but certainly not least, you actually brought this one up and I thought of the bromance angle too, but this one's a different type. This one's a bromance, but it's a different type of bromance than Cotton Comes to Harlem. Yeah, it's
tragic bromance.
It's a tragic bromance. Yes. And that is Point Break, a film that has also been circled on this show for some time. And maybe I would argue one of the most GGTMC movies that we have not gotten to yet.
I would say, yeah, there's times when I think back and it's like, how have we not covered this? Like this film, you know, people say, and this isn't just an opportunity to bag on Die Hard, but I don't know, man, like late cycle action films, like, cause Point Break's what, 90, I think, or
92, maybe 90, 92, 94, somewhere in that ballpark.
Yeah. So it's in the same realm as Die Hard, man. Point Break's it. Like, Point Break is it.
Yeah, I haven't seen Point Break in a long time, but I'm looking forward to it to rewatch and discuss. And it's one that, honestly, I've been wanting to pick for this show for a long time, but it just seemed like too obvious a choice for us for so long.
But
as I've said, this year I want to get some obvious ones out of the way. The Warriors. Actually, Conan's going to be sponsored by Arrow, but it works out because I've been wanting to do Conan from the beginning. And so I'm just trying to get some things that I really want us to talk about that we've always kind of circled for, like sharks in the water forever.
Now it's time to feast, man.
Yeah, time to feast. I mean, our Warriors episode was super popular, as you can imagine.
I think would be too, man. Like, this is a film. It's weird. I feel like this one's almost, yes, it's well-loved, but I feel like it's for some reason, like, it's kind of not talked about as much again. It's kind of gone below the radar again. And Bigelow is a filmmaker that both of us love. Really great filmmaker. Yeah, it's going to be awesome to talk about her, talk about Johnny Utah.
Yeah, and Bodie.
And Bodie, man. Oh, it's going to be so good.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be fun to revisit
that. He's making his return.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he wears Hawaiian shirts in this one, too.
He totally does. They're probably from his own like closet.
I think this was right before he had the accident that kind of altered him.
Yeah.
This might have been one of the last kind of great Gary Busey performances. It's going to be fun, though. Arnie on the show again. Jeffrey Cambridge on the show again. Jeff Bridges on the show again. John Carpenter on the show again.
Yeah. Lots of favorites.
Yep.
Ossie Davis, maybe. Have we done an Ossie Davis film either in front of or behind the camera? I don't think we have.
We may have done something where he's in front of the camera. I'm not sure we've ever done anything behind the camera from Ossie.
Oh.
I'd have to look. But I don't, nothing. I mean, he didn't direct Wishman. I know that. Because I still got Wishman up here. If he would have, we'd be doing it tomorrow.
We would be, man.
We'd be calling an audible.
Yeah.
And going with Wishman, directed by Ossie Davis. I'm looking now to see what all he's did as a director, because I'm curious now. No, we have not done any. I think the only other one that would probably... Well, there's a few. His films are interesting. I'll say that.
Yeah.
I think I've circled Gordon's War before.
Oh, man. Gordon's War is great.
Yeah, the Paul Winfield film.
Yeah. Paul Winfield's a guy that doesn't get enough love, I think. He's great, man.
Yeah, that's a good one that doesn't get... Tony King's in that one. So that one's...
Our guy.
Yeah, that one's under sync. Grace Jones is in that one, too. We need to maybe circle back around on some Aussie.
That's right, man.
At some point and talk about Gordon's War. So that one's 1973. So he did some stuff that is interesting. No Listen, doubt.
Love is in the air at the GGTMC.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that one too. The Code Red. Yeah, it is. Oh, Cool Red. Cool Red.
Yeah.
That's kind of a colonial type thing. But yeah, Ossie Davis had an interesting career as a director. Didn't do a whole lot. He kind of quit in the 70s, but should have made more.
Figure that doesn't get talked about enough, I think, when you look at African-American contributions in film. Yeah. Him and Ruby Dee, his wife, his political activism.
He did a lot of stuff outside of film work. But when I think of film work, I often think of he's kind of like, even though it's kind of the same generation in some ways, he's kind of Morgan Freeman before Morgan Freeman in a lot of ways.
Yeah, yeah.
But he did do a lot of stuff. I don't think Morgan does a whole lot of stuff outside of cinema, but he's kind of a quiet, reserved type. Okay, so next week, Starman. I'm looking forward to it. I haven't watched that in, it's been a long time, Will. It's been a long time since I've seen Starman. So looking forward to that revisit. We will check it out, and we'll be back next week. Make sure to check out Not a Bomb Podcast, Watch Skip Plus. They're coming back. Justin, I think, is stepping down from the podcasting world for a little while. He's just got some stuff going on, but Jose has got another teammate joining the crew. So Watch Skip Plus will return. Let's see. Night of the Living Podcast. Calibre 9 from Outer Space. Got to get those guys in there now.
Yeah.
Night of the Living Podcast, which I've listened to every episode they put out. I've quite enjoyed them. They are similar to us in some ways. I know they said that, but they're also different than us in some ways. And I like that. Again, derivatives of things and everything else, not ripoffs, just derivatives of something. And I'm flattered. I'm flattered that, and I'm sure you are as well, that, we've influenced people to podcasts. We've always talked about that we've influenced people. That's always been cool. See Here Podcast, love that album. Ten Stroke Punter, yeah, Mary Clickers, Feminine Critique, it's still out there, it's still going strong.
Yes.
A lot of good stuff. Raiders of the Podcast, there we go. And I probably forgot somebody again. And you know what, before we started doing this show, I was like, I'm going to write them all down right now. And I didn't. And right now I'm going to write them all down, and I won't. So there we go.
That's how it goes.
That's how it goes. But we'll be back next week to talk Starman, John Carpenter Starman. Until then, I will say adios.
Adios.
And remember, it wasn't you, it was me.
Thanks for listening. You can find the gentleman at ggtmc.com, and you can email the gentleman at midnightcinema@gmail.com. Yeah.